to Killer Cross Space. This is episode 41. I wasn't planning on this to be a three-parter, but this is going to be the third part and the final part of the Darley's case for now. If anything, you know, comes up in the future, I will cover it. Yeah, I wasn't planning on this to be part three, but when I recorded part two, I had like a really bad headache and couldn't really focus on a lot of stuff. So, thank you for, you know, tuning in. But this one I'm going to still discuss Joe Douglas's write-up. But this is going to be like more into a few other things, like reasons why Darley deserves a new trial and stuff. And it's pretty interesting. But I will start off with number one, the definite conflict of interest with Doug Malter. I'm no, like I said, I'm pronouncing, I'll just call him Doug. But Doug represented Darley and Darren in a gag order. They were both told not to talk about the case, but went right ahead and started making money for themselves by doing interviews. And they did a radio show, and they hired Doug to represent them. Before Doug was hired, he went to Darren and told him that the court-appointed lawyers were going to, you know, basically say he was part of the crime. And Darren and Darley then made a deal with Doug. If he hired him, he wouldn't try to go after Darren in the case. And the court-appointed lawyers tried everything to stop Doug from doing this. They warned them she would lose her case if they didn't go after Darren, and they didn't care. They hired him knowing this. The lawyers went to court and explained the conflict of interest, but Doug denied it. The only way to know for sure if he actually made the deal was to go through the trial. The trial proved for a fact that Doug lied and he had a conflict, and he could have given overwhelming evidence to prove Darren not only had motive, but he had opportunity. Doug believed he could win on proving that mock trial Davis had and by proving police, error. It backfired. The jury just couldn't fit the pieces together to realize what he was doing. He didn't even try to prove the intruder theory, and that was what the jury needed most. They didn't know there was another person who could have done the crime. Number two. The original court reporter indicated she believed Darley did it. She then made over 33,000 mistakes in the transcripts. When they finally investigated her, she hid the information in storage and denied having it. She was having her daughter help her do the transcripts. They eventually got them back, but not all of them. Number three. They hired a new transcriber to fix the transcript, but it was obvious that she didn't fix them properly. Darley couldn't file a fair appeal with what she was given with those transcripts. Even the 911 call was not accurate. Number four. The police did not do a proper investigation. They couldn't have. They admitted that they never even investigated Darren because his story appeared to fit. Darley counted on that. She trusted them when they told her they were leaving no stone unturned. Well, they left a huge stone unturned. Darren. Darren made sure nobody ever looked or suspected him. That has gone on for over 22 years. Number five. The police moved and misplaced and even lost evidence. Number six. Officer Waddell gave information to Greg Davis that proved Darren left the house at 2:34 a.m. and had the opportunity to plant or lose a sock. Both Davis and Doug went out their way to make sure this was not pointed out to the jury. This could have changed the outcome of that trial. That jury would have started to look at Darren and not Darley. Number seven. A tape was done by police illegally and they took the fifth on the stand. That was completely unfair to Darley. And Doug admitted to making crucial mistakes in the trial, starting with putting Darley on the stand, allowing the silly string tape in. Darley did not have proper counsel. She was really done wrong. Number nine, the police failed to take several items from the home during the first search. They went back for the hat after they returned the possession of home back to Darren. Evidence has risen in the past years that more than, you know, say Darren was in the crime, he was involved in it. And this could have been exposed years ago before the trial. And number 11, witnesses such as Barbara Javale had admitted to lying on the stand. And Darren himself was caught lying several times, and instead of being charged, Doug tried to get him to change his testimony. And Darren was asked about the table in the living room, and he said it was tipped over and the flowers hit the floor, but the police and Doug knew the flower arrangements never hit the floor and the table never fell over. Darren was never charged for any of the times he lied on the stand. That's just crazy if you think about it. You know, these are some key points you would think Darren would have got investigated. like I said, a lot of things, you know, people, there's a lot of things out there if you watch on YouTube of where they believe, you know, that Darren did do all this. Like, I'm 50-50 on it. Like, I could see it going both ways, but it's definitely seeming like Darley is the innocent one here. And here's some other key notes in this. The biggest issues with the police. There were several officers who claimed that Darley gave different versions of the story to them, so I started digging for some kind of confirmation of this. Remember, this is all being from what Joe wrote up for me. But I first checked out Parker. He set up an interview days in advance with Darley. He just happened to get the only interview room that he had no working recorder. I found that very suspicious. Here we have the double murder of two baby boys, and they're interviewing the suspect, but yet they have no recording of that interview. Then Parker does a later interview, and he claims Darley told him at least 10 or 12 times that if she did it, she didn't remember, yet she had no proof of this whatsoever. I mean, he had no proof of this whatsoever. Sorry about that. But Darley has denied this and still does. There is Patterson, he claimed. Then there is Patterson. He claimed the struggle was in the hallway, but when he testified, he admitted he didn't take notes, and now he wasn't sure if she even said that. And Patterson didn't take notes at all while on the scene. How is that even possible? Okay, the issues with Greg Davis' theory on the case and evidence. I do know that Greg Davis intentionally changed the wording on Darley's statements. He changed running to walking so that he could make the blood evidence fit his theory. I read over her claims of what happened. She said the intruder was walking away, not running. She had got up and she followed the intruder. She didn't say she ran after him. Davis then claimed that Darley said she walked into the kitchen through the glass, but her foot were not cut. He claims her blood was under the bloody footprints. I looked at her statement. She specifically says it only took a few steps through the kitchen on the side where the wine rack was. It was true. The blood evidence proved it. She went back to look in the mirror to see her injury later, but she didn't have to go through the glass for that either. It was obvious Davis was being deceitful. Davis's theory on the sock in the alley. I would like to compare two different stories regarding the sock. I would like to post the prosecution's version of how the sock got in the alley, and then post my theory on how the sock got into the alley. I will do mine first, being as I am writing this. Remember, this is written by Joe Douglas. I believe the sock was in the pant leg of Darren's pants. I believe the sock was dragging out from his pant leg during the crime. The boy's blood was on the sock, but Darley's wasn't. They were on the floor. Darley wasn't. Darren had the opportunity not to only lose the sock in the alley, but he also had the opportunity to switch out his pants in that laundry room where his bloody jeans were found, hidden in between the boy's pants. I believe as the sock landed in that spot in the alley by the manhole when evidence was being disposed of, the sock wasn't fresh and new sitting in a rag box to be used to clean the home. It was dirty and appeared to me to have drag marks on it. It had fibers from Darren's runners. From his running shoes. And Darren first denied the sock was even his until he was told there was evidence to prove it was his sock. The strange thing about the sock is had Darley's DNA only in the toe of the sock. She did the laundry. As far as I know, the sock didn't have Darren's DNA on the inside. It only had fibers from his runners. If that sock had been washed, it would have still have fibers in the sock that wouldn't have washed out with just one washing. But I believe the sock was lost down the alley when Darren left the house at 2:34 a.m. My theory being that Darren was in the utility room right after the attack, giving him the chance to switch out and hide those pants in between the boy's jeans. JaVale's mother did the laundry the last 2 days, and her DNA wasn't found in the sock. So this means the sock that was in the alley was from a previous time when Darley herself was doing the laundry. And I asked Darley and Cooper if they would please test the sock to see if any fibers were on it to prove it had been dragged to the alley. I explained to both of them that the sock only had a tiny bit on one end of it, proving it could have been touching the blood from the boys. And Darley had never implicated Darren in the crime, so it made no sense whatsoever why she would have planted a sock from Darren, knowing it could be traced back to him. It may have made sense if she had put blood and lots of it from all three of them. It made no sense, only the boys' blood. I haven't completely worked out all the details 100%, but I have spent a great deal of time researching that sock. And the prosecution's theory on the sock was Darley stabs the boys while Damon's alive and takes his sock 75 feet down the alley and plants it, taking the risk of this injured child waking up Darren. She then comes back in, and she goes over to stab Damon again. She then turns the knife on herself and begins to scream and dials 911 while Damon is still alive. When the fibers were found in the sock, Greg Davis claims Darlie wore Darren's shoes to go out and plant the sock. This made no sense whatsoever. She didn't wear the sock. How could 11 people have heard this story and believed it? The rest of this is going to clarify the rumors about Officer Waddell. But right from the get-go, Darren accused Waddell of lying and causing the death of Damon via basically him not helping. And I wanted to clear up those rumors and lies Darren had been telling. First of all, Waddell said he was told to say in court he had no control of what the jury was or was not allowed to hear. Greg Davis and Doug took care of that. Remember, Doug's Doug Mulder. First of all, Darren claimed Waddell let the intruder get away. He said a shirtless, shoeless, hatless intruder fled to home when Waddell arrived and he let that man get away. Darren and Darlie did an interview on the Lazaz show, and Darlie described this in detail. And Darren sat there white as a ghost, knowing Darlie was lying through her teeth. They knew the intruder they were talking about was Darren. Darren then said Waddell went into shock and was useless. He claimed he didn't draw his gun, but a witness said he did. This is going to kind of repeat some things from part two. But Darren did say that Waddell came in and puked in the bathroom, but there was no evidence of that. And Darren then accused Waddell of just standing there and doing nothing to try and save his family. I was shocked to see that he could actually lie about that. It was obvious Officer David Waddell went over and tried to help Darlie right away. Officer Waddell had moved away shortly after these murders, and he was never part of the investigation. He gave his statement and moved on. But there are rumors from the Darlie supporters that Waddell framed Darlie and lied and set her up. And I admit at first it appeared that Waddell was not honest about what was going on. I then began to do my own research into Waddell, and I learned that his story did match the other witnesses' testimony. It even matched certain things that Darlie herself said. What didn't match was Darren's version. I contacted Officer Waddell myself to get the facts. I asked him all the questions that bothering me, and first off, I asked him why he said he told Darlie to help Damon when he first came in. He told me during the questioning in court, Davis and Doug were all over the place in their timeline. He told me not everything that was heard on the 911 call. He explained there was a conversation that went on that was never heard at all. I went back to the 911 call and I realized this was true. There were so many times that things were said and not heard on that call. For example, Darlie is heard telling Darren at 15 seconds to the 911 call to hurry. She goes on to further say something to him, but you can't make out what she was saying. So I did believe Waddell when he told me this. And I then told him that Darren had told everyone that he let the intruder get away. I asked him if he was aware of this. He said no. And I asked him if he was aware that Darren had already done CPR on Devin and gave up on him before he arrived. I told Waddell that Darren had already announced Devin died to Darlie. He told me he was not aware of that, and I sent him proof of it. I told him the CPR Darren did on Devin in front of him was all for show. He knew Devin died 4 minutes earlier. He now understands what Darren did. I then asked him about his interview. I asked him, why did you explain about Darren leaving, stopping that CPR on Devin, and leaving the house in your interview, but not in court? He told me he understood the jury was told this. I proved to him they weren't, so I asked what happened. Darren came in and immediately went over to Devin without Waddell asking him to. He then started that horrific CPR on him. Waddell turned his back to help Darlie, and this was confirmed the 911 call. He then turns to look back, and Darren had fled to home. He said he believed he went to Karen's to get help, but I explained to him he didn't go to Karen's at that time. I asked him why he never asked Darren where he went. He didn't have an answer. I asked him why he wasn't suspicious of Darren when he returned to the home alone. Officer Waddell told me he always suspected Darren. I then asked Waddell about Darren sneaking back into the house. He told me he didn't get past him when he was guarding the door. I knew Darren got in, so I went back to the court testimonies and looked again. Sure enough, Darren had came back in the house with Terry and himself first, and then Karen followed shortly after. Terry went in by the door but never entered the house. Darren went straight in. Instead of going towards Devin, who was left on the living room floor for evidence, he went through dining room straight to the kitchen and then to the garage. Darren was asked about this. He even said he was told not to go back into the house, but he said nobody was keeping him out. He said he went back in to look over the evidence. Officer Waddell didn't see Darren get into the house. He was just coming down the stairs when Karen started to walk in. Officer Waddell stopped her. Both Karen and Terry were escorted out of the house. But Waddell didn't lie about this. He hadn't been at the door guarding it when Darren came in. Karen Waddell didn't even know Darren went into the dining room. and only Terry knew, and he didn't even testify. Officer Wydell was painted the liar by Darren just so he could not be trusted. Darren believed if he made Wydell a liar, he could get away with messing up the timeline about going over the Karens. Officer Wydell told me Karen didn't get in there until at least 2:40 a.m. Wydell explained he didn't lie in court. He just couldn't go there and say whatever he wanted. He was instructed to say certain things. Those are the rules, and that is how the courts work. I had no reason to believe Officer Wydell lied about anything. But there's one other thing that did bother me. He said Darley described being attacked in the kitchen by the intruder shortly after he got there. But none of that is heard on the tape. Wydell stands by his testimony and says she told him she was attacked in the kitchen. I told Wydell that Darley had explained to some other people that she thought she was attacked, but she didn't know if it was a dream or if it happened. She knew in hospital later some kind of an attack did happen because of the beating on her body. Her confusion got blown away out of context by so many people. And disturbing facts about Darley's case is the most important fact to know about Darley's case was never investigated properly. It was simply never investigated, period. Darren was in the home at the time of the murders. He claimed he was asleep upstairs in his room while his family was slaughtered and attacked downstairs. According to the police department involved, they claimed his story checked out, and that is why he never became a suspect. He was never investigated. Tunnel vision set in the second. They called Detective Crone on the scene. Within 20 minutes of walking on that crime scene, he announced it was an inside job. The description I got from Darley of the intruder, said it wasn't Darren, and that was the end of their investigation in the Darren. And after speaking to a detective who had been on the case almost from the start, I knew Darley had truly been done wrong. I tried to forward and explain the mounds of evidence that uncovered about Darren, and his response to me was, Darley said it wasn't Darren. I was shocked and furious to hear this man speak those words. I asked him straight up, did he even read her description? She was only saw a foggy image of this intruder from behind. She said he was wearing a black cap, but didn't know if it had a bill on it or not. She said he had jeans, a black shirt, and it was what she said about the hair that got my attention. The person had longer, straight hair in the back, just like Darren's. He had jeans just like what Darren had on. There was a cap lay on the floor where the intruder fled, and Darren couldn't be excluded from the DNA on that sweatband. There was a black piece of clothing also laying on the floor that police never even took into evidence. They didn't even take the cap at first. They went back 14 days later after the house was returned to Darren and retrieved that cap. And Darren wrote an affidavit on June 8th, 2 days after the murders, and he had lied throughout the entire statement. All the police had to do was compare the police statement to the 911 call, and they would have known for a fact Darren did not have an alibi. And Darley. The police failed Darley. I don't know if I told you about the detective, but he was involved from the start. He wasn't even interested in hearing my new findings about Darren. He said Darley said it wasn't Darren, he dropped it. I couldn't believe it. And he didn't even know that Darren snuck out of the house at 2:34 AM and Wydell saw it. So as you can tell, this is an interesting case, and you know, it could go a lot of different ways, and it definitely does prove that it's, you know, it could lead to Darren. You know, a lot of cases are not investigated properly. It happens, sadly. Like I said, my theory is, like, you know, it could be, you know, Darley's in prison for it, but, you know, there's a lot of things that shows that she most likely didn't do it. Was it Darren? Very possible. Was it somebody else? Who knows? But I thank you for tuning in. And I'll catch you on the next episode.